there, everyone. Thank you so much for joining. My name is Laura, and welcome to The She Project. Today, we are so lucky to be joined not just by one amazing guest, but we actually have two amazing guests on our show today, Laura Moon and Nicole Gerard. They are both managing partners in their company, Bearslate, and they also run two amazing podcasts, which they use as a platform for sharing ideas, facilitating learning, and inspiring individuals to do more, learn more, be more, and get more out of their lives. So today we're going to cover a range of topics, starting at confidence in women, to the importance of recognising your own strengths and combating imposter syndrome, and how owning their own strengths has impacted their career and given Laura and Nicole the confidence to get more out of their lives. So welcome, Laura and Nicole. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We're excited to be here.
Absolutely.
So let's go ahead and just dive right in. Can you give us a brief insight into your career journey to date? So what led you to Bearslate and what you guys do?
The very edited version.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Cole's notes.
Yes.
I think for me, I spent a lot of time in automotive. Always been driven to educate and share the knowledge that I learn. And that is really how Bearslate was founded. It's really based on the idea that you can start with a bare slate, with an idea and some hard work and some discipline and some direction, you can grow it into something amazing.
Yeah.
And so I have taken the years of experience that I have collectively with Nicole and a few other team members. Mm-hmm. And that's what really makes up Bearslate. We try to provide education in some different platforms so that people can learn how to get more out of their life.
And that's where I come in. So for me, like Laura, I had a lengthy career in the Canadian healthcare system. I spent 2 decades there. When I left corporate, I opened my own firm, my own consulting firm. Mm-hmm. And I have always had a really heavy focus on leveraging technology and especially video, mostly because I hate wasting time, which is where Laura and I really align.
Yes.
Because when you're wasting time, you can't work on your goals, you can't do what you want to do, you can't focus what you want to focus on. So for me, I've always been fascinated and sort of focused on what can I do with technology that takes me out of the equation so I can go do other things. And so Laura and
put
I
that
met
together and you get us
a while ago and we decided to combine superpowers.
Yes.
Amazing. Thanks so much for that. So like I said, today the main topic that I want to focus on is that confidence in women. So traditionally, women seem to have a lack of confidence in themselves and they are impacted by imposter syndrome regularly. So mm-hmm. Why do you think that's so common in women?
I think that it's common in everyone. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it's isolated specifically to women. And having spent a career surrounded by men, I know that it is present there. And I think in particular with women, and I know that Nicole will challenge me a little bit on this, which makes her a great partner for me, that we as women are nurturers, we're raised to be nurturers, we're mothers.
Yeah.
We have the children, we carry an unnecessary burden of feeling that we need to be the providers of the emotions in the family environment. And I think that emotions have been so, we've been taught to suppress emotions so heavily in a business environment that we feel a little out of place sometimes. Yeah. So I think that that's really, for me, where it comes from. Being a mother of two, living in sort of a male heavy industry, I think that women have a tendency to sort of, they don't feel comfortable with suppressing the emotion. And I think mm-hmm. that is something that we believe is to be how we should be in a business environment.
Yeah. And when you were in that like male dominated industry, did you feel like that was something that you had to deal with? Like you had to feel like you were suppressing your emotions?
No, no. You know, I've always had a really strong sense of confidence, but I also have a very strong sense of self-worth and I know who I am.
Yeah.
I'm sure that that was something that I developed over time. But I am a person that takes action. You know, I think one of the things when we speak about confidence, I think the first step to confidence is really understanding your skill set, understanding who you are, how you act, why you do all the things that you do, and then starting to accept that. So, Nicole, what do you think?
I don't disagree with you.
Yeah.
I just think that imposter syndrome and maybe a lack of confidence manifests in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Between individual, like gender aside, I think it just manifests in different ways. And then we add the layer on top of it of what is perceived to be professional, mm-hmm. what's oversharing, yeah. what isn't, what have we up until now deemed to be okay to talk about. I mean, and I, like you, in the healthcare industry, there are pockets where it is heavily dominated by guys and heavily dominated by women. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the last corporate positions I had, we were an 11,000 person organization, a large percentage of which was women. It was healthcare, it was nursing. But the space that I worked in, I was always speaking with board members and CEOs and the pharma company executives and the male physicians and the neurosurgeons. And like Laura, I've never had a problem. I can genuinely say, and this is, I think, where the conversation gets interesting, because oftentimes we highlight the fact that women have imposter syndrome and a lack of self-confidence and they're in a quote unquote male industry or world. Mm-hmm. I have not felt that way. Personally.
Yeah.
I think I have to admit, though, I think the first time that I did feel vulnerable like that was when I took the responsibility of becoming an entrepreneur. I never felt that in a career space.
What do you mean?
Where I had a defined title, where I knew my role. Okay. But when you step out into entrepreneurship.
Imposter syndrome.
Yeah. When you step out of corporate, you spend a lifetime in corporate and you step out of corporate, there is a very big mindset shift that needs to happen.
Yeah.
And I can say that would have been probably the most vulnerable I had felt in my life. Right. It's different.
The dynamic of responsibility is different.
Yeah.
And Laura and I talk about this a lot on our shows there. And I know there's a lot of discussion and heated arguments at some points, whether mm-hmm. or not entrepreneurs are born or made. I do think that there's sort of a variance between, you know, accidental entrepreneurship, meaning your dad started a business and then they passed it down and you take over.
Yeah.
There seems to be, at least in my experience, I know Laura, you've seen it too, an employee mindset. Yes. Having confidence in your position, your mm-hmm. role, making decisions is different than when you are responsible for everything from A mm-hmm. to Z, from when you wake up to when you go to sleep. That's where I think the imposter syndrome comes in. But I think maybe it's just fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
But it's also the realization that every decision you make is on you.
Yeah.
Where it's not like that when you're an employee.
Yeah, previously you'd have had a defined role and responsibilities, and then there's
safety
always
net.
Someone above you. There, that person above you is your safety net as well. So to go from that to being the one that's solely in charge, that must have mm-hmm. been quite a shift in mindset. Cole, would you say that you were impacted by imposter syndrome, or do you think that that's something that's never really impacted you?
I've had moments of it, yes. Mm-hmm. I can honestly say, and this sounds, I know how it sounds for people that do struggle with it, and I know many people in my life that are well educated, like master's level, speak multiple languages, they've had a wonderful career, that suffer with imposter syndrome, and you look at them and you go, are you kidding me? You're amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I, like Laura, am confident in my ability to figure it out.
We really spend a lot of time with self-discovery before we move into any kind of teaching or education,
mm-hmm.
Because it is really the foundation that builds you as a human being, really understanding how you take action and why you respond in different environments.
Yeah.
It's the most important key to your success. And both Nicole and I have really invested time into understanding who we are. And you'll see that in our confidence. I can tell you what I'm really, really good at, and I can tell you what I'm really, really bad at. And I can tell you what not to ask me to do, because I will never deliver it. And with knowing that information, it gives you power, and it just instantly gives you confidence. Yeah. And I don't know if any of the listeners have had an opportunity, but we have created a really simple formula for confidence. And it really comes down to 4 points. There's 4 things that you really need to pay attention to after you know yourself. So always start with you first, because you're the most important. After that, it's the mindset. What is your mindset? Do you have the courage to be who you are now that you know who you are?
It's a big one.
Are you aware of your environment? Like really, really aware and present? And are you being consistent in your actions? If you can accomplish those 4 things, then you will never feel insecure, or you will never lack confidence to do anything. And you will actually take action that's going to bring so much value to your life.
Yeah.
And we've invested a lot of time into learning these things, and it's practice, right? You just don't become confident.
It is. Learned behavior.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well,
and I think that's the point too, when we often try to look at the at confidence between men, women, all in between. It as a human being, confidence is something exactly like Laura just said. It's something you learn. It's something you practice. It's a habit. You can lose your confidence. You can be shaken, and it's something that, again, with the mindset, the first step in our success formula for confidence is, where's your head at?
Because
our negative self-talk, our internal talk, our self-limiting beliefs, these are all things that are going on in our own heads, and other people cannot control what's going on in here. They might cause a blip and make you think and affect certain things, but you're in control of your feelings and your thoughts, which possibly is what also scares people, is the fact that there's no one to blame but you.
Right?
Well, accepting the responsibility is the key.
Yeah, it's a lot, but it's good when you do it.
It's really
so
good.
It's then so good.
These 4 steps that you have, so you did mention you first need to know yourself. So when you mean know your strengths, how did you find your strengths? How do you know what you're good at? How do you know what you need to work on so that you can then take those 4 steps?
I'll let you start.
Well, I mean, just intrinsically, maybe it was the way we were raised, or the people that we would listen to or admire or aspire to be like, you know, in media. But I think, Laura, and correct me if I'm, because we've had this conversation before, we're pretty confident to begin with. Which is a practice trait from when we were young.
Well, we had to be. We had to be in our careers.
Yeah, absolutely.
We had to choose the responsibility to be confident in, in ourselves and our abilities.
But then along the way, we actually found a way to assess individuals that didn't have the opportunity or didn't have the understanding that they could start building this habit. I'll let Laura speak about it, because she introduced me to it. Even though I have done all the other fancy things on the planet, this one assessment that we came across, it validated what we kind, what you kind of know in your gut, right? I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. So we use a tool, that was created by Kathy Colby, called the Colby Assessment. And what it does, it's about 30 minutes, it's online, and it's just a series of questions, that you answer, with what your instincts tell you to answer. And that assessment, generates a report that, that we look at, and it puts you into 4 different categories. And it scores you in each category. And there are, people present in 4 different ways. They're either fact finders, so they need to understand all of the facts before they can take action. Their other category is follow through, so they need a plan, or they need to be part of the plan. They need to create the plan before they take action. Another category is quick starts. So they instantly want to take action and run with something. And then the last category is implementers. And the implementers are, if you're a really high implementer, you're a doctor, you're a builder, you like to do things with your hands, you like to tear things apart and build them back together better than they were. And so when once we've accomplished the assessment, we have a conversation. Mm-hmm. And we talk about, you know, the assessment told me, you know, I'm going to go out on a limb here, Laura, because I know you a little bit, but I know that you've got a fair amount of fact finder in you because you like to mm-hmm. know the details and you want to run through things in advance.
Yeah.
And you need that. You need that in you before you feel comfortable taking action. Mm-hmm. And with me knowing that about you, just from knowing the Colby and studying human behavior half my life and managing people, mm-hmm. I know that you need that. So mm-hmm. I don't need that at all. But because you need that, then I'm willing to accommodate you so that you feel comfortable when we take action together.
And apply patience.
And I can apply
which
patience.
Which is important.
Which I don't have a lot of, but I'm learning.
Oh, I'm guilty as well. I just mean, when, as Laura is illustrating, if we, because Laura and I are the same in that
particular
similar. Category.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And because we now know this information about us, like I just need a few details. I'm good. Just leave me alone. Yeah. I'm running. And there's people on our team that are fact finders. They need more information. Instead of feeling frustrated, like, oh my God, I've explained this 15 times. Like, do we have enough info? Can we just get going? Now there's that ability to apply patience and go, hold on a second. Karen on the team needs this information to feel as good as I feel going fast. So now we're able to go, okay,
let's give that to Karen or
give Karen confidence.
Absolutely.
Because what happens is once you understand that and you can go through it and validate it, and the assessment's been on the market for over 30 years. I mean, mm-hmm. the research and information behind
validated.
It. It's and we aren't certified in it. We look at the assessment, we take a snapshot of it, and we mm-hmm. have professionals that are certified that can do deep dives into it. Mm-hmm. But just really understanding how you take action and what you need and being able to communicate that with others grounds you.
Yeah.
And when you are grounded, you are confident.
Exactly.
So, and there's nothing, there's nothing wrong. There's nothing good or bad. Like you can't have a good or bad score. Everybody's score is perfect mm-hmm. because everybody is different. Yeah. You know, as much as Nicole and I are similar, we're still very different. We take action the same. So if you said, hey, let's go down the street and buy some milk and make something, Nicole and I are like, yeah, let's go. Because that's we're like, we're on it. We're there. Where are we going? You know, we don't even need to know where we're going.
We'll figure it out as we go.
Yeah, I'm asking, where are we going?
Well, Nicole needs a little bit of information, but you want the map. Yeah. You want to know what kind of milk we're going to buy. What are we uh-huh. making with it?
How are we getting there?
Take? How are we, right? You need to know it all.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah,
and so totally. Knowing that as we move into something together, we're highly effective. We're highly efficient. Yeah. We really communicate well, and we have a clear expectation and understanding of what each is able to deliver. And so when you can create that, you are confident.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, it made me laugh just a little bit at the irony of it. In plain language, what this actually means is once you know who you are and you're confident and you know what the other people around you need, there's less gossip. There are less hurt feelings. There is less politics in the office. There's less, oh, I think she meant this when they said that, and now I feel this way. That almost completely goes away. I'm not joking. So from a team perspective, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Because we do this with our private coaching clients, right? We'll do the team assessment, and what it does, it'll take my profile and Laura's profile, and then you, Laura, your profile, to say the three of you, like, this is the dynamic. And mm-hmm. when Nicole asks for this, this is what she needs. And Nicole, you need to slow down because Laura needs this from you.
Yeah.
And it's so helpful.
Yeah, it's
when it
amazing.
Comes to confidence, I cannot tell you how much more validated you feel, but just – calm you yeah. feel in knowing that you understand what your needs are.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. that helps you from a team perspective. What about looking at it from a single perspective? So your strengths and like, take this, we'll use this for an example. Someone's not confident in talking at a public event, however they've been asked to do it. Sure. How do they get that confidence? How do they get the confidence to speak, put themselves out of their comfort zone and speak to a group of people that they've never met? Where does that come from?
Practice.
Well, there's a couple things. There's also a couple things that come into play there.
Sure.
It depends on your profile, right? If you are a fact finder and you're not used mm-hmm. to being a quick start, what's going to make you feel confident when to go out on that stage? What do you need
yeah.
to have to be confident? I mean, mm-hmm. confidence is about having courage and about being prepared and being ready for something mm-hmm. and being yeah. aware. So my question to that individual would be, first of all, what is it that will make you feel comfortable to do that? Because there is something.
Yeah.
You may not think there is, yeah. but I guarantee you there is something that will make you feel more comfortable to get mm-hmm. up and do that. Yeah. The other thing is, how do you intend to communicate your information? Because mm-hmm. it's not necessarily the stage or the people. It's often how you're being perceived that's yeah. scaring you more. It's yeah. the feedback that you might get. And then, so it's the minds, again, we start with mindset. What is the mm-hmm. mindset going mm-hmm. into this activity? What do I need to make myself feel more confident to be able to do this, to execute? And then having the courage to ask for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And maybe you need help. Maybe you need more information. Maybe you need somebody to map it out with you.
Well, Laura, I was going to say a good example of this exact example would be like a professor or a teacher mm-hmm. where they need a syllabus and an outline, and maybe they need like the curriculum, and that makes them feel prepared. Mm-hmm. I mean, Laura and I have done a ton of public speaking workshops, etc., over the years, and depending on your comfort level and your style, like for me to have reams and reams and reams and paragraphs of data and information, I'm just like, no. Don't do that to me. Whereas someone else that is a fact finder feels comforted by the fact that they have all of that to fall back on.
Yeah.
And that gives them the confidence to move forward, right? Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And there's tools. There's so many tools available.
Yeah.
You're getting up on stage. Maybe you need a teleprompter. Maybe you need a screen behind you
yes.
that prompts you to stay on topic. I mean, mm-hmm. there are yeah. so many tools available, but it starts with, Are you letting the fear overrun your decision to actually follow through on it,
yeah.
for starters? Mm-hmm. And if it's fear that's stopping you, name it. What is it? Because yeah. when you give fear a name, it walks away.
Yeah.
Can I tell you a secret too, specifically yeah. about public speaking? If I still stand by the fact that if you want to be doing this regularly and be good at it, practice, then the fear yeah. goes away. But the truth, think about your own behavior sitting in a presentation or in a talk or in a, people tune you out
yep.
majority of the time.
So I mean, I'm paying
don't
attention.
Worry.
Yeah,
no one's listening anyway.
They're not listening honestly. Anyway. So like,
until
you're not
you
that
get
important.
To a point where you're super comfortable and you're engaging and entertaining and ask questions and people actually want to hear you. Most people are like, yeah, just give me the Coles Notes version and I'm out.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it's good.
Yeah. I think as well, you mentioned what, at one point that it's all about what you need to be confident. So I actually was reading something the other day, and it was a woman who was doing public speaking, and she'd been to loads of different events, and this her kind of style and what she needed was an open stage that she can wander about, be interactive with the audience. However, mm-hmm. when she got to this one, she had to sit down and she was like closed off in a little area, so she didn't have that opportunity to walk about and have that interactive format, and it totally threw her off. So knowing what you have or what you need before you go into this situation, that can be make or break.
Absolutely.
Every time.
Yeah.
Every time. I learned that lesson when I was 20 years old. I had the toughest boss on earth.
Oh God.
And I learned very quickly not to walk into that office unless I was prepared.
Yeah.
And
a fact finder.
From that day on, I never go into an environment without being prepared or ready for it. Especially one that scares me.
And I bet that's where some of your confidence came from.
Yeah.
Well,
knowing who I am, it's knowing who I am, knowing that I can get through it, because we always get through it. What scares me is if I start to run around something and not follow through all the way. Because that's when you hurt yourself. That's when you're putting yourself in a bad situation. It's not being prepared.
And I
think that it's just, again, it comes to awareness and then consistency over and over and over again. You don't get good at anything unless you keep doing over and over and over and over again. And showing up.
You mentioned as well, like, it's all about how you're in your head, you're thinking about how the audience is going to perceive you. So say that you're speaking to senior people in your business. That's why you're nervous, because these people are how many grades above you? They're CEOs. Yep. I actually read a quote today and it made me think about you. Actually, Nicole, made me think about a story that you told that I'll get you to mention after I've given this quote. But it says, never be intimidated by anyone who has achieved more than you. They will have been exactly where you are at some point in their life. You should learn from their successes.
Yes. So
everyone's been in the same position. These people that you're speaking to, you're nervous about, they are just human beings.
And let me just say, in general, the CEO of your organization right now goes home, takes off probably a suit, sits down with his family. He might have kids and a wife, and they're ticked because he hasn't fixed the thing in the garage, and he has to walk the dog, and he has to do all the
garbage.
He's just a regular person.
Mm-hmm.
The intimidation is in your own head. It's not them. It's you.
Yeah. And Nicole, it was your story about the CEO when you worked in pharma.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a fun story, and he and I are still friends to this day, funny enough. But when I was quite a bit younger, I was one of the youngest supervisors in the lab at the time. We had a full lab of about 80 techs. The CEO that was new, that was brought in to sort of help reorganize the organization, everyone was intimidated by him. And long story short, I ended up in a meeting with him as one of the supervisors to talk about, hi, like, this is how the lab's functioning. This is happening in Paris, isn't it? And I was treating him like a human being. And at one point, he kind of started laughing. And I said, what? And he said, you're not afraid of me, are you? And I looked at him and said, am I supposed to be? He said, no, most people don't talk to me like the way you're talking.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me realize, and it's always stuck in my head, that your title can change, your position can change, your salary can change. For those that derive personal confidence or a sense of value based on your job title or your salary, to me says that they lack confidence. And that's the shield they use to say, I am of worth and I have value, therefore I get to be respected and look. But that comes from within. Your title and your suit and your office, and it has nothing to do with anything, because that all changes.
Yeah.
So I learned that at quite a young age.
Yeah.
But also because my parents always said, you treat everyone the same.
Yeah.
And you see this quote now, but it doesn't matter what job you have. You treat everyone the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just all human. Yeah.
Definitely. Yes,
be respectful, absolutely. Be kind.
Okay, Nicole, so following on just from your point there about the CEO. So you mentioned before, this was a male-dominated company. You were just a young girl. Sometimes people would be scared of that CEO. However, when we spoke before, the both of you had actually mentioned that you have never had problems with men in power. However, you have encountered problems more so with females that get power.
Mm.
So this podcast, especially, I'm wanting to look at the challenges of women and empower women. But we can't do that if we're not empowering each other. So can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah.
For sure. I'd love
to. Well, we both can.
No, I know we both can. I find that women, unfortunately, some women and not all, because we don't all act the same, feel that they have to present a certain way when they reach a certain title, because it's the way that it's always been done and it's what's expected. And I think that's where we find women tearing other women down. And, you know, it to me, when you move into and accept the responsibility of a leader or a manager, your role is to foster, nurture, grow those around you. And you don't have to be so stern or so, I'm at a loss of words here, but I think that there's just this pressure and expectation to perform a certain way.
Yeah.
But you don't have to. There is a way to accomplish so much with kindness and with nurturing. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, it's all hugs and cuddles and yay, everybody's so great and it's da-da-da-da-da.
No, because that extreme can be detrimental as well.
Yeah, and we've seen both. You know, we've seen women experience both. But I think it's just, again, it comes down to that mindset when you reach that position and you're in that title. And it is challenging. I mean, when you are in charge of everything, you do go through sort of a change in personality and you can become complacent, but you have to be diligent with your life learning and the expectations that are all the same, whether you are, you know, an entry level position or you're running a company. But you don't have to lead the way people have led because you think that's what you have to do to have that role.
I've read something really interesting the other day. So I don't know if you've read the book Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg. No. So it's really good. I would definitely recommend it. One point that she brings up in that book is the Queen Bee theory. So because previously women that got senior positions were so few and far between, these women were seen as the queen bee and everyone else was the worker bee. So these women had to make sure that the worker bees were not able to get up and take her queen bee status. So they pushed the other women down because there wasn't enough room for more than one woman at the top. But now that everything's shifted, we don't have that situation anymore where you've only got enough room for one woman. So we should be helping each other and supporting each other.
I agree. And this is where I run into problems in conversations. Simply because I have never looked at, and please keep in mind, when I look back, I was often maybe the only one or maybe one of two women in a room with board members. I have never had the thought and looked around and thought, oh, it's all guys.
Yeah.
I don't have a chance to be here. My thought was, what do I have to do to get here? Like, what do I have to learn? What do I have to know? What skill do I have to build? The gender factor never crossed my mind until I was told that it should cross my mind. And I do think there is some, maybe not completely, but some validity to the fact that unless you're told, it's funny, there was a comedian I first heard sort of tell this story and this sort of analogy, who had said, until I was told I should put a lock on my, now what did she say? It was almost to the effect of, until someone pointed out the fact like, oh, there hasn't been a female president before. That's a problem. It never occurred to me that I couldn't do it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think also too, Nicole, like, and I know where you're going with this too. I think that a lot of women don't choose that. You know, I think women don't necessarily choose the roles. It's not that they're not made available to them, because I can tell you in automotive, if any female wanted the role, it was theirs.
Yeah.
It was, did women want to work in that environment? And did they want the role? You know, I think that it really comes down to choice. It's a big question. And, you know, that book is, you know, it's been well received and not well received by women. It's you know, and it all comes down to personal preference and what you believe in. But I truly believe that if you want something, it doesn't matter whether you're a woman or a man. If you want something and you go for it, you will get it.
Yeah,
you will get it.
Every position, every salary negotiation, every promotion that I have asked for, it has never occurred to me to think, I'm not going to negotiate because I'm a female.
Yeah. Right.
I shouldn't ask because, like, it's always been, if you don't ask, you're not going to know. And then that is where the fear of rejection steps in. It's not that there's someone stopping you. There are no laws that say we can't be or do. There's nothing from that perspective. There's no policy at an organization that says no females on the board allowed. Mm-hmm. People, yeah. You have to ask. I mean, yeah. Obviously this is not true for some of the bad apples that we see.
Of course. Yeah.
But for the majority, I think there's been enough discussion where some of us have convinced ourselves that we can't, because when it literally comes down to, oh, I'm going to ask and see what happens.
Yeah.
I'm going to find out.
Have the conversation.
Most of the people that are where they are there because they asked.
They put themselves out there.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what your podcast's about. So yeah. Ask more, get more.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
And based on our experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone that we have interviewed has gone for what they wanted and asked for what they wanted. And it's pretty incredible to watch and to hear the stories. It comes down to the mindset, and the courage to be yourself and to really know who you are so that you can demand the things that you want.
Yes. Yeah. You don't need permission from anybody to say to you, I want to apply for that thing or ask for that raise or renegotiate that contract. No, who, you don't need permission to ask.
Well, and also no one's going to invite you.
Absolutely not.
There's no invitation coming.
No, absolutely
I'm sorry.
Not.
Like if you're sitting around waiting for someone to say, hey, I want you to be the CEO of this company. Hey, I want you to be on this board. There's no invitation in the mail.
That's, you know what? It's so funny. That's the thing that has always confused me is when I hear the frustration and the complaint and the sadness around someone that is very good at their job. They do things so well. They're well-liked. They would be a good leader. But they never express the fact that they want to do ABC.
Want something, yeah.
They don't even say it, never mind ask for it. But so how are we to know that you want to be the director of HR or that you want to when take over the engineering department? I don't know.
And the person sitting next to you is asking for it, so they're going to get it over you.
Every time.
Yeah.
It's like getting into a relationship. You know, your first relationship, you think, oh, you know, this person's going to bring me flowers, or this person's going to know what I need for dinner, or this person's going to know when I need attention. Like, they don't know.
I know.
They can't see in your mind.
And here's the thing. We can't complain when decisions are made without consulting us that we don't like the outcome. So we also can't complain when decisions are made and it's supposed to be in the positive direction and we've never said anything and don't like the outcome.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you don't ask, you don't say, people aren't going to know.
Yeah. Definitely. So that's one of your podcasts. And you also have the other podcast, which is you've touched on a bit earlier. It's more the kind of educational one. And it's covers those 4 points. So your last point was be accountable. Can you talk to us about that? How can you keep yourself accountable?
And accountability comes with consistency, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How much are you scheduling the things that you need to do? Mm-hmm. Do you understand the actions that need to happen and when they need to happen? And how are you holding yourself accountable to it? Because things just don't happen. Just like waiting for the invitation. It's not coming. You need to take action and you need to schedule it. And you need to figure out tips and tricks that are going to help you do it. And the first step is taking the responsibility. If you don't take responsibility, there'll never be accountability.
No.
So if you really want something to happen, you need to put it in your calendar.
Yeah.
Have put someone call note. You on it.
I don't care. Yeah.
Find a accountability buddy. And when I think of accountability buddies, you have to be careful because you don't want the buddy that's going to harass you and irritate you.
And then
you don't want to do it anymore. Yeah. You want the accountability buddy that calls and says, hey, Laura, how's that going? How can I help you? Because I want to see you achieve your goal.
Have you been to the gym yet? Let's go to the gym.
Do you want to come with me?
Uh-huh.
Not like, why didn't you go? What's wrong with you?
But here's the thing. The accountability piece also, it's what you do behind closed doors. Like, are you staying true to your word even when no one's looking?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's where you can build the confidence by just remaining accountable to yourself. Like, for me, my one little personal goal, I have to do my 10,000 plus steps a day because I want to be healthier. I want to get that exercise in, right? I don't need to tell everyone in the world about it. But I am trying to hold myself accountable, and I have my own little tips and tricks and hacks to do that. Yep. But even if no one's looking, I'm still doing it.
Yeah.
Right. And that exactly. gives me the confidence to take on bigger and more exciting goals and longer term goals. And look, I was able to do that every day or most of it, most of the time. What else can I try?
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of really great strategies for accountability. You know, if you keep lists of things that you want to accomplish and you don't get to them, or there's the thing on the top of the list that you know you have to do and you don't really feel like doing it, just work on one of the things on the list.
Yeah.
It doesn't always have to be the thing that's at the top. And I guarantee you, we call it positive procrastination. I guarantee you, if you start at the third thing on the list, you're going to go back to the first because you know you need to get it done anyway. Yeah. But those are little strategies for being accountable. Mm-hmm. There's another great one called if-then. So finding triggers in your environment that are going to remind you of the thing that you were trying to do. So if then at 5 o'clock I haven't gone to the gym, then I'm going to put on my gym clothes.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. You put on your gym clothes, you're going to the gym, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, so and Laura, what you're talking about too, though, it's the one thing that can erode our confidence in our own ability. I'm going to say this and everyone's going to groan immediately. New Year's resolutions.
Yeah.
Everyone feels guilty by the sixth weekend of the new year because they haven't hit all of their New Year's
goals.
Here's the thing. And I'll give you my personal tip and trick for my big bucket list of goals I have. I do not set more than 2 main goals per month. Yes, there's little things and daily things, but if I want to do like I'm working towards something, 2. I don't have 17. I don't have don't overwhelm yourself because then you feel
like you're failing
bad.
All the time.
Yeah,
and you got to celebrate the little wins. 100%. Celebrate every little win you have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Build that confidence.
Yeah. I know, exactly. And that's how you'll get there. What I'm going to do now is move on to the quick fire round. So I've got 3 questions for each of you. I've been asking everyone this question, and this is my favorite question. So what is the best piece of advice you've received through your career?
I mean, there's, I think that, and this is not going to be a typical answer. I think that all advice can be good and bad. And I think the best advice is probably the advice that fit me as an individual, that was relevant to me as a person. And it would always come down to, you know, be the best that you can be with the abilities that you have. And just never stop trying.
I was just going to say that.
Keep
trying.
Yeah, just never. Never
really
stop
reflect.
Trying.
Yeah, yeah, keep trying.
Just keep going. Keep taking action.
Yeah.
One thing that I've learned in my life is that if you are always trying and taking action, no matter how many times you fail, you're still learning. You're still growing. Yeah. And each time it's easier and you gain so much more with every try. Because we learn so much from our experiences, and when we stop experiencing, we stop learning. And so that would be it for me.
Amazing. So the next question is, what is the favorite part of your role, so your job now?
I am responsible for success and failure. I love that. People think I'm nuts, but I'm like, it's me, and I have enough confidence in my ability to figure it out.
Laura, I think you knew what she was going to say there.
I didn't. It's just funny to me. It's funny to me. But I know that. I mean, I just intuitively know that. My favorite thing about my role right now, and is a little out there too, but I just love having conversations. Especially with people I don't know, because there's so much to learn from people, and I love learning from people.
Yeah,
so it's that's definitely it for me.
But Laura, what do you love about being a managing partner?
Oh, well, about that. Well, I love that I have control. I love that I can
there you go.
Fail. I love that I can win. I love that I can make decisions. I love that I can get in arguments. I love that I can
get in arguments.
Sometimes. Nice, healthy argument is fantastic.
You love conflict.
That's a whole other episode, but let me tell you, discussions and some low-level healthy conflict is good for growth.
Oh yeah. Nicole and I, like, we get along great. We know who each other are. We don't always think the same.
Mm-hmm. I'll challenge her. She'll challenge me.
We're like, what are you talking about? Yeah, no, a good discussion is very healthy.
Yeah.
And those I feel I can have them more freely in the role that I have now.
Yeah. Fab. Yeah. Okay, so this question's a little bit of a random one. What do you find more valuable in a colleague, education or experience?
Experience. For me.
Yeah.
Unless they're a doctor or a surgeon or something, then I want both.
Well, it depends. Yeah, yeah, it really depends on what it is that the project is. It's very project specific. I'm going to go with I don't look for either one of those things.
Those were the options, Laura.
So I have to stay within the options.
Which do I
have to pick again? I have to pick education or experience.
So if you don't,
my guts tell me education only because I am not a fact finder. And it's good for me to have somebody
with
facts behind them.
That's cool.
To validate everything that I do. Now, would I like them to have experience? Absolutely, because I value experience over anything in the world. Well,
here's the thing. Education is knowledge. Experience is the practical application of that knowledge, which is where I was going with
it. Okay. So we're going to go 50-50.
There you go. 50.
Okay, that'll do. We're happy
Unless you're a surgeon, then you must have both.
Right.
I wouldn't want an uneducated surgeon.
Right. Or an experience. Yeah,
right.
So yeah, I know.
That's a tricky question. I think that's a trick question.
That's a good question.
I thought I'd get used with that one. So that wraps up the quick fire round. Thank you so much. So just to wrap up now, could you guys tell the listeners where they can reach you?
Yeah, I'm going to leave that to Nicole. She's really good at that. She loves it when she gets to do that.
I love when I get to talk. Is that what you're saying? So you can find Bear Slate everywhere across the interwebs and all socials. So we're at www.bareslate.ca because we are Canadian. That's our website. Our podcasts are listed on the website, so you can find them through there nice and easy on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, etc. It's all Bear Slate. Yeah.
Amazing. And I'll link everything below.
And if anyone is interested in, you know, doing a Colby assessment and having a conversation, please reach out to us. I mean, it is so valuable to know who you are, to know how you take action and to know where to start.
It's true.
With just navigating life in general, whether it's a career, anything like that. And we're here to help any way we can.
Amazing. Thanks so much. So I think we will need to get you back on for episode 2 about conflict.
Sure.
Love it.
But thank you so much for joining me today. I have loved having you on the show, and that's been amazing. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The She Project. If you like listening to these episodes, please make sure you leave us a review and hit the subscribe button to have all episodes automatically downloaded to your phone. You can also follow us on Facebook and LinkedIn under The She Project, and we're on Instagram at The She Project Podcast. So make sure you're following us for all latest updates and episodes. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.